Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show, where business owners, professionals, and entrepreneurs gather to discover playmaking ideas for success. Your host is internationally recognized speaker, facilitator, and author, Steve Klein, who sits down with fascinating playmakers who have made themselves and their company successful. Steve will introduce you to CEOs and executives who discuss their playmaking path toward success. And now, it's time to meet this show's playmaker. Here's your host, Steve Klein.
Carlyle said, "Our main business is not to see what lies dimly at a distance, but to do what lies clearly at hand." Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. I'm Steve Klein. In the studio today is a guest who sees the vision and does what's clearly at hand. Today's Playmakers company is a global leader in shock and vibration monitoring. With us today is a CEO who has a global network of over 300 sales and technical service partners in 62 countries. This great playmaker is Tony Funk. Tony is president and CEO of Spotsy. As president and CEO since May of 2015, Tony directs Spotsy's management team, bringing more than 17 years of international experience in developing and executing innovative product, service, and channel strategies. Spotsy is an Internet of Things end-to-end solution provider that enables customers to spot damage in their operations and see it in real time. Spotsy is the global leader in shock and vibration monitoring through low-cost connectivity and data, and has developed a low-cost connected ecosystem that delivers data from devices anywhere in the world to customers' fingertips. Prior to joining Spotsy, Tony ran a $100 million business for Stock Building Supply Holdings and also worked for Ingersoll Rand, running and realigning their residential Trane and American Standard air conditioner portfolio. Well, Tony, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Be a lot to talk about because Spotsy's interesting. But before we get there, my first question is, how does a Jayhawk with an advertising degree run a multi-million dollar company?
Well, you know, honestly, if you pay any attention to March Madness, you know Jayhawks know how to win. So I'll just leave it at that.
My guess is going to University of Kansas caused you to be a winner, or you went there because you were a winner. And speaking of being a winner, you were a competitive skier.
That's correct.
How much winning did you have there?
You know, my highest claim to fame, unfortunately, is just second place in the Rocky Mountain region. Call it my highest claim to fame. I could probably dig the medal out of an old box somewhere at some point.
Well, then you went from skiing to advertising. What caused that shift, or why did you leave skiing?
Yeah, you know, listen, there wasn't a career in skiing, especially at that time. I was a mogul skier. I think just shortly after I had, you know, stopped doing that, the Olympics had just picked it up, so it was like an exhibition sport. So there wasn't the allure behind it that there is today. And candidly, you know, as I sit there and stare my father in the eyes, you know, there wasn't going to be any money to be made there either. So advertising looked interesting to me. But I shortly found out that it wasn't what I wanted to do.
You were in advertising. What was your first job once you got out? Was it in the advertising field?
So when I was in college, my senior year of college, I actually went to class Tuesdays and Thursdays and then worked with a marketing and advertising firm on Monday, Wednesday, Friday down in Kansas City. And so that was my first job. It was a company called RTN Marketing, a guy, Paul Radke, Ken Tomble, and they were great, you know, early mentors in my life. Got to see them, you know, run and operate their business. Extremely creative guys, but they, you know, basically handed me a computer. We didn't have cell phones back then, right? Handed me a computer and said, go, you know, you eat what you kill. And that was a great experience in itself. Just having to go figure it out. I was making next to nothing other than what I brought in.
As a CEO of companies, I can see how that marketing experience probably helped you.
Absolutely.
Later on while you were doing that. Well, let's talk about your business and how did you get started in working with multimillion dollar companies?
Yeah, so actually advertising led to it. So I moved from Kansas City to Colorado, worked, which was my home, Denver, Colorado, which was my hometown. Worked for an advertising agency out there and had a couple of really interesting clients, you know, everything from Vail Resorts to this company called Johns Manville, which is a Berkshire Hathaway company. I realized that advertising wasn't quite it for me. I had grown up in a family business. So, you know, son of a dry cleaner. So, you know, three generations of dry cleaning and, you know, saw the blood, sweat, and tears that it takes to operate a business, and we were lucky if we could patch together an advertising budget, let alone waste money on advertising. And it's not my point. There's a lot to be gained from that. So it gave me an appreciation for that side of it. But I knew there was more, and was more interested in the operations of the business and how you actually make the businesses run, and extremely interested in the innovation side. And so when I'd left with a partner, and I had left to actually do just some interim work and market strategy, market research, market consulting. And within the announcement of it, another mentor of mine, a guy named Scott DeShetler, who was the director of marketing at Johns Manville, said, "Hey, would you like to come do some work for us? We've gone through this change. They were acquired by Berkshire Hathaway. They were brought in a whole new leadership team, a bunch of guys from GE and Honeywell. I'm a data-based guy." He knew that, needed some help gathering some data. And so they brought me in on a consulting basis. And you know, that very quickly turned into a job. And so another gentleman there named Jeff Ray, he was vice president, general manager of the insulation business at the time, you know, had a chance to work together very close with him, and he came over from GE, just was really, you know, amazed and impressed at how they learned to operate these businesses and got more and more engaged in that. And so before I knew it, I was running their commercial insulation part of the business that moved into the residential insulation part of the business. And then, you know, beyond insulation, Johns Manville actually is really, really an interesting company. I mean, they make, as an example, they make the material for the tiles on the space shuttle. Not the glue, but the materials for the tiles on the space shuttle. You know, so I ended up over in the engineered products group, worked for some great people over there, and then got exposure to, you know, call it a lot more of the innovation side of the business. So that was particularly exciting.
It's an interesting business you're in right now. I mean, you learned a lot going through stock building supply with Johns Manville, Ingersoll Rand. What does your business do? What does Spotsy do?
So we, like our name says, we help customers spot damage in their operations and see it in real time. And, you know, it's interesting. You know, the real thesis behind this business is we took two great brands, established brands, one as old as 40 years old, another one 26 years old. Both ShockWatch and ShockLog are the two names of the brands there. And just really strong global following for each of these products, right? So ShockLog, more importantly, in the power generation side of the business, so customers like GE, WEG, ABB, Siemens. And then on the ShockWatch side, you know, we're a smaller business, but, you know, we've got a $1 billion brand in the ShockWatch name. There's not a Fortune 500 company, you know, in this world, Fortune 1000 company in this world that, you know, hasn't or doesn't have our ShockWatch products, you know, in it, either in their manufacturing facilities or in their logistics supply chain. So for us, you know, what we did or what our game plan has been here is let's take these millions of devices that we've sell all over the world and take this wonderful distribution network and all of these great partners and customers and people, and let's connect this information to our customers' fingertips. And so that's where we laid this ecosystem over it. That includes purchasing our own mobile virtual network enabler. What does that mean? Beyond the big words, it basically means that we have our own mobile network that we own. Cellular mobile network that we own that gives us access to the global roaming contracts around the world and all the, call it, switching capabilities in the background that allow us to actually control our customer experience in terms of connecting with their devices anywhere in the world. You can imagine if you sent your cell phone, you know, on a trip around the world, imagine the bill you'd get back. In our case, the reason that we've decided to put this ecosystem in place is we can, for a flat fee, we charge $10 a month to our customers and they can communicate with their devices anywhere in the world. And that's almost unheard of. That's a real strategic advantage we've got. So we took these great brands and connected them.
I'm looking at some of the products. And by the way, the website is Spotsee, SPOTSEE.io. And I'm looking at ShockDot, ShockWatch, as you mentioned, SpotBot, ShockLog, ShockTrack, OpsWatch, TiltWatch. As I'm looking at this, my guess is with what you're doing, based on what you said too, you're really in the data business.
That's correct.
You mentioned that you were into that. It's all about data to help the client become more effective, but it's real time because you're connected with them. Is that all correct?
That's correct. Yeah, and you know, probably the biggest realization for the business is, well, you know, the businesses that we have, ShockLog and ShockWatch, had been great businesses, but the reality is, in this world, hardware's dead, right? Moore's Law has taken over, and the cost of hardware continues to get lower and lower and lower, and accessibility continues to get more, you know, greater and greater and greater to that hardware. And so what really matters, ultimately, is the data, right? You get a lot of people that are singing this song out there, a lot of people with the same, call it, hypothesis, if you will, in their businesses, and I think the real difference between what they're doing and what we're doing is we've taken existing customers, existing customer bases, great brands, and we're simply adding the connectivity and the data repositories or mines to that.
You're taking a lot off their plate and give it to them as it's needed.
That's great.
Immediately, and apparently your costs, the return on investment is great based on what you're charging your clients too.
Yep.
One of the things I mentioned when I was reading your bio is a term called Internet of Things.
Yes.
Which people have heard of, and I've had people say to me, I have no idea what that means. So tie in Internet of Things with what you do and the data and working with your clients.
Yeah, I mean, probably an overused, misunderstood term for good reason. Simplify it. It's just take what you've got and connect it, right? I mean, that's how simple this really is. And then if you take it one step further, it's, okay, now what did I learn from that experience that I just, you know, basically created a track record of? Now I'm able to put that into the cloud. Now what can I learn from that information over time? And so if you think about what we do and what we do really well, we help customers see where the shock is happening or temperature changes that are happening or temperature damage that's happening. Well, with an analog device, it happens, you know it happened, you send it in for a return, right? With a connected device, you're able to actually turn around and see over time which warehouses am I having the most trouble in, right? Or which routes do I have the most problems in? You know, an interesting example with our ShockLog products is in India, the fastest route that you may think is not the best route, because of the poor infrastructure and the holes and the call it shoddy roads that exist. If you're shipping a very sensitive power transformer, the shortest route is not always the best route, because you can create damage that have a $1 million piece of equipment that didn't quite make it there intact.
Yeah, as I'm thinking about this, the question I want to ask is, how old is Spotsee? When did the company actually begin?
So the company actually begins, if you trace our roots back to 1976 with the ShockWatch business. We rebranded the company, so we made an acquisition in 2014 of the ShockLog business, and then did a recent acquisition of our mobile virtual network enabler to kind of close out the ecosystem that we're talking about here. But we just made the transformation from those brands into, call it, this umbrella brand of Spotsee just this last August.
So as you mentioned that, you're a 40-plus-year-old company.
Correct.
But correct me if I'm wrong, based on what you do with all this data, your business has transformed dynamically over the last 10 years because of the Internet. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah. And so I would say absolutely has transformed because of the Internet. And I'd say with that also comes new competition and new ways of doing things. And so that's why we've had to, you know, put on fresh lenses. We've got an awesome team, many of which are relatively new on the innovation side, because there's new skills and trades that are required to do it.
it's a fast-moving business. Well, the question I have for you then is, based on your career, because you've had a lot of interesting positions, is there any one thing you can point to where everything changed and it got you to where you are right now?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think everybody's got their stories. Everybody's got their crucibles in life, right? And both either on the personal side or on the professional side. And I'd say for me, this all came to a head when my father passed away. So he was a, you know, as I'd mentioned, a dry cleaner, third generation dry cleaner. He passed away at a too soon at a young age. And there wasn't much of a plan in place. And importantly, we were coming into the recession. And so I was working at Johns Manville, as I'd mentioned, and it was a pretty, you know, engaging and comfortable job, right? And I quickly had to move into the world of uncomfortable because my mother was left to operate the business and needed a lot of help in doing the things that he was doing, you know, all of his life. So jumped into that. And, you know, very quickly learned that nobody lends money to, you know, a 12-store dry cleaner in a recession. and we were losing money, so that wasn't a good situation. So we ended up beginning a consolidation play. And so that was the best way to get to profitability and ultimately get to a divestment for us as a business. And so that included a 363 sale, which is a bankruptcy, you know, basically buy another company out of bankruptcy. And we effectively bought their customer list. It was a hotel dry cleaning group. And that got us to break even, which was a victory. You redefine good when you're in a bad situation. and then merged with our largest competitor, 50-plus year competitor. You know, these guys competed with my grandfather. And so merged with them. We consolidated those operations, got to about, call it 7% EBITDA before we sold out to the rest of the partners there in that group. And I went off to Ingersoll Rand at that point, and my mother was able to retire, so that's a good thing.
So you would have been the fourth generation in the dry cleaning business. Was there any feeling through the family of this is the end of it? It's not going to continue any longer?
Yeah. I mean, look, you know, there's an emotional side to that when you're in any business, there's an emotional side to it, right?
That's what paid for your youth, your growing up, that took care of you, covered your food and your clothing and your shelter.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was so much of my identity and so much of our family's identity in so many different ways. You know, I mean, these are the same doors that my grandfather used to walk through. These are the same doors that my father walked through. And you know, so there was remnants and memories of everything there, but you know the reality of it is what's and I think that's, you know, that's probably the best learning that I got from it is you know you gotta be realistic about what's happening, and creative and realistic, but realistic about what's happening. And you know, this was not my script by any means. I promised my father himself that I wouldn't go into this business. Similarly, you know, his father passed at an early age, and he ended up in the business. You know, there was a lot more to do. He knew that, and I knew that. To answer your question, it was emotional, but it was the right thing to do.
When you go into a dry cleaners these days, do you walk in looking at her from the perspective of, I see what you're doing. Maybe if you could fix this, it might be a little better.
Oh, I defer to the experts. You know, I'm quite happy to not be as involved as I was, I have to be honest. But yes, you know, I more than anything, I'm probably more empathetic with the person on the other end of the counter.
Than critical then.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned a couple of mentors that you had along the way. Any other mentors or influences you've had growing up that had a big impact in helping you get to where you are right now?
Yeah, you know, listen, it's just people. You know, I had mentioned the gentleman Scott DeShetler who brought me into Johns Manville, Scott DeShetler and Jeff Ray who brought me in. Jeff taught me a lot about process and about using, you know, how to use data to effectively, you know, understand and manage a business, you know, and bring people to the data. That's the important part. You know, other people who've stood out to me and have been really important in my career, and it's really funny. I've worked with every single one of these. So I keep coming back to Johns Manville, but, you know, like a family tree, the Johns Manville family at that time has just really spread out. I went to go work for our CEO, Steve Hockhauser, over at Ingersoll Rand when I finished up the dry cleaning piece. You know, he had moved from Johns Manville over to run the residential business over at Ingersoll Rand, and he said, hey, you know, what are you doing next? And I said, I don't know, Katie, my wife and I are trying to figure it out. And he said, how do you feel about moving to Tyler, Texas? And most people looked at me like I'm crazy when I told him I moved from Denver to Tyler. At least Denver people do. And she is a trooper. She said, yeah, why not? And the reason was, he said, look, I can't get anybody to move down to Tyler. We bought this train business. The residential business is down there. But Steve really did a great job of just, he's a wonderful people person. He's done a great job of teaching me the value of team. And then probably most importantly is another gentleman named Dion Person, who, you know, Dion actually was our general counsel up until recently. He's gone off to run the spinoff for Service Master. I don't know if you know what's going on there, but Service Master's spinning off a piece of their business. He's gone to do that. But Dion and I have worked together. He was our general counsel at Johns Manville. He led one of our businesses at Johns Manville. He came over to Ingersoll Rand and actually ran the strategy and M&A over at Ingersoll Rand. And I'll tell you, there's not a more creative business person that I've ever come across in my career than Dion himself. So all these people have had this long-standing influence, I'll call it, from the moment, call it my, you know, my egg as a business person, you know, cracked and I started to grow up and learn to the point that now we, you know, in many cases do business together.
You mentioned all those mentors, people that had an influence on you that helped develop your leadership style. I was going to ask how you developed it. I won't, because that's what happened. But what is your leadership style?
What is my leadership style? So I would say, here it is. Number one is the details do matter, right? So it's amazing from a contract to, you know, an innovation, even a customer-focused process, you know, every single one of those can fall apart if the details aren't paid attention to. Everybody can talk about what, and everybody pretty much knows what the high level, you know, we should do's are, right? Mm-hmm. It's the actual, what are we doing and how do we understand the details that go there. So number one is, I would say I am detail oriented from a leadership standpoint, and that expectation is there on the team because it ultimately matters. On the flip side of that, it's all about empowerment, right? So look, we're assembling this team because we're expecting these people to run these plays, right? And if you want to be on this team and you appreciate and value that as well, then go do that. But there's a couple things that I value, right, and that we value. And so we got the team together about a year and a half ago, and we said, you know, what's right about our culture? What's wrong about our culture? What do we want to be? And who do we want to be? And I'm not saying, you know, we want to be a multi-billion-dollar business. It wasn't that conversation. It was, no. Who do we want to be in our heart here? And who do we want on our team? And who do we want to become ourselves, right? And so we came up with five different elements that work for both of us, work on both sides of this. We said, well, you know, first of all, we want to be coachable. Right. So we want people who are coachable as opposed to defensive. And, you know, I can admit, you know, when I get an idea behind me, I get pretty dang defensive about it. Right. Because it becomes your baby. And so that's an area that I like to work on a lot. And I'm honest about that with the team. They can call me out when I'm defensive or being defensive about an idea if I don't call myself out first. The other piece is being a coach instead of a critic. All right. You know, another one that's pretty easy to be. But coaching, man, it's amazing just how much more valuable that becomes when you're asking the question a little bit more Socratically, I'd say, than dictating or picking at. The other elements are being proactive, being curious, and being competitive. I mean, if you think about the opposites of each of those, it's complacency, ignorance, and frankly, greed on the other side of competitive. We sat down, we established who we wanted to be, who we wanted to work with, and we looked for these in each other. And so hopefully that gives a little bit of an idea about management style and, you know, how we manage. So we can look each other in the eyes and say, all right, are we being who we said we were going to be at any given point in any given day?
And apparently it's working with what you've done and the successes you've had up to this point. Tell our listeners how they can get a hold of Spot C.
So, you know, the best way to do that is actually just go straight to our website, right? So Spotsy, www.spotsy.io. All of the appropriate, call it contact information, is actually there on the website. You can, no matter where you are in the world, we've got different offices in Shanghai, Sao Paulo, Brazil, Netherlands, United Kingdom, of course, here in the United States, and of course, Mexico as well. So you'll see all the contact information there, and we welcome you to contact any of our representatives. We're happy to do business.
Well, Tony, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show. This was a great interview. Thank you.
Thanks.
You are definitely a playmaker, and a playmaker is someone that makes something happen, and you are definitely making something happen in your life, your people's life, and also with Spotsy, too. So congratulations on that. We just spoke with Tony Funk. Tony is president and CEO of Spotsy. Thank you also for listening to us. Join us again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com, where you can get all of our past episodes. That's PlaymakersTalkShow.com, and we're going to be back with more Playmakers. See you then.
You've been listening to Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein. Join Steve again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com for more interviews with interesting and successful playmaking CEOs and executives.